Chapter 76, The Deliverance of Shalva. After talking with his charioteer, the son of Daruka, Pradyumna could understand the real circumstances, and therefore he refreshed himself by washing his mouth and hands. Arming himself properly with bows and arrows, he asked his charioteer to take him near the place where Shalva's commander-in-chief was standing. During the short absence of Pradyumna from the battlefield, Duman, Shalva's commander-in-chief, had been taking over the position of the soldiers of the Yadu dynasty. By appearing in the battlefield, Pradyumna immediately stopped him and struck him with 8 arrows. With 4 arrows, he killed 4 horses, and with 1 arrow, he killed his chariot driver, and with another arrow, he cut his bow in 2. With another arrow, he cut his flag into pieces, and with another, he severed his head from his body. On the other fronts, heroes like Gada, Satyaki, and Samba were engaged in killing the soldiers of Shalva. The soldiers who were staying with Shalva in the airplane were also killed in the fighting, and they fell into the ocean. Each party began to strike the opposite party very severely. The battle was fierce and dangerous and continued for 27 days without stop. While the fight was going on in the city of Dwarka, Krishna was staying at Indraprastha, along with the Pandavas and King Yudhisthira. This fighting with Shalva took place after the Rajasuya Yajna had been performed by King Yudhisthira and after the killing of Shishupal. When Lord Krishna understood that there was great danger in the city of Dwarka, he took permission from the elderly members of the Pandava family, especially from his aunt, Kunti Devi, and started immediately for Dwarka. Lord Krishna began to think that while he was arriving in Hastinapur, with Balaram after the killing of Shishupal, Shishupal's men must have attacked Dwarka. On reaching Dwarka, Lord Krishna saw that the whole city was greatly endangered. He placed Balaramaji in a strategic position for the protection of the city, and he himself asked his charioteer, Daruka, to prepare to start. He said, "Daruka, please immediately take me to where Shalva is staying. You may know that this Shalva is a very powerful, mysterious man. Don't fear him in the least." As soon as he got his orders from Lord Krishna, Daruka had him seated on the chariot and drove very quickly toward Shalva. The chariot of Lord Krishna was marked with the flag bearing the insignia of Garuda. And as soon as the soldiers and warriors of the Yadu dynasty saw the flag, they could understand that Lord Krishna was on the battlefield. By this time, almost all the soldiers of Shalva had been killed. But when Shalva saw that Krishna had come to the battlefield, he released a great powerful weapon, which flew through the sky with a roaring sound like a great meteor. It was so bright that the whole sky lit up by its presence. But as soon as Lord Krishna appeared, he tore the great weapon into hundreds and thousands of pieces by releasing his own arrow. Lord Krishna struck Shalva with 16 arrows, and with showers of arrows he overpowered the airplane, just as the sun in the clear sky overpowers the whole sky by an unlimited number of molecules of sunshine. Shalva struck a severe blow to Krishna's left side, where the Lord was carrying his bow, Sharanga. And as a result, the Sharanga bow fell from Lord Krishna's hand. This dropping of the bow was indeed wonderful. Great personalities and demigods who were observing the fighting between Shalva and Krishna became most perturbed by this, then began to exclaim, "Alas, alas." Shalva thought that he had become victorious, and with a roaring sound began to address Lord Krishna as follows, "You rascal Krishna, you kidnapped Rukmini forcibly, even in our presence. You baffled my friend Shishupal and married Rukmini yourself. And in the great assembly at King Yudhisthira's Rajasuya Yajna, while my friend Shishupal was a little absent-minded, you took an opportunity to kill him. Everyone thinks that you are a great fighter and that no one can conquer you. So now you'll have to prove your strength. I think that if you stand before me any longer with my sharpened arrows, I shall send you to a place wherefrom you will never return." To this Lord Krishna replied, "Foolish Shalva, you are talking nonsensically. You do not know that the moment of death is already upon your head. Those who are actually heroes do not talk much. They prove their prowess by practical exhibition of chivalrous activities. After saying this, Lord Krishna, in great anger, struck Shalva on the collarbone with his club so severely that he began to bleed internally and tremble as if he were going to collapse from severe cold. Before Krishna was able to strike him again, however, Shalva became invisible by his mystic power. Within a few moments, a mysterious unknown man came before Lord Krishna. Crying loudly, he bowed down at the Lord's lotus feet and said to him, "Since you are the most beloved son of your father Vasudev, your mother Devaki has sent me to inform you of the unfortunate news that your father has been arrested by Shalva and taken away by force. He took him just as a butcher mercilessly takes away an animal." When Lord Krishna heard this unfortunate news from the unknown man, he at first became most perturbed, just like an ordinary human being. His face showed signs of grief, and he began to cry in a piteous tone. "How could this happen? My brother Lord Balaram is there, and it is impossible for anyone to conquer Balaramaji. He is in charge of Dwarka City, and I know he is always alert. How could Shalva possibly enter the city and arrest my father in that way? Whatever he may be, Shalva's power is limited, so how could it be possible that he has conquered the strength of Balaramaji and taken away my father, arresting him as described by this man? Alas, destiny is, after all, very powerful." While Sri Krishna was thinking like this, Shalva brought before him in custody a man exactly resembling Vasudev, his father. These were all creations of the mystic power of Shalva. Shalva began to address Krishna, "You rascal Krishna, look, this is your father, who has begotten you and by whose mercy you are still living. Now just see how I kill your father. If you have any strength, try to save him." The mystic juggler Shalva, speaking in this way before Lord Krishna, immediately cut off the head of the false Vasudev. Without hesitation, he took away the dead body and got into his airplane. Lord Krishna is the self-sufficient Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yet, because he was playing the role of a human being, he became very depressed for a moment, as if he had actually lost his father. But at the next moment, he could understand that the arrest and killing of his father were demonstrations of the mystic powers which Shalva had learned from the demon Maya. Coming to his right consciousness, he could see that there was no messenger and no head of his father, but that only Shalva had left in his airplane, which was flying in the sky. He then began to think of slaying Shalva. Krishna's reaction is a controversial point among great authorities and saintly persons. How could Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the reservoir of all power and knowledge, be bewildered in such a way? Lamentation, aggrievement, and bewilderment are characteristics of persons who are conditioned souls. But how can such things affect the person of the Supreme, who is full of knowledge, power, and all opulence? Actually, it is not at all possible that Lord Krishna was misled by the mystic jugglery of Shalva. He was displaying his pastime in playing the role of a human being. Great saintly persons and sages who are engaged in the devotional service of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna and who have thus achieved the greatest perfection of self-realization have transcended the bewilderments of the bodily concept of life. Lord Krishna is the ultimate goal for such saintly persons. How then could Krishna have been bewildered by the mystic jugglery of Shalva? The conclusion is that Lord Krishna's bewilderment was another opulence of a Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hare Krishna. When Shalva thought that Krishna had been bewildered by his mystic representations, he became encouraged and began to attack the Lord with greater strength and energy by showering volumes of arrows upon him. But the enthusiasm of Shalva can be compared to the speedy march of flies into a fire. Lord Krishna, by hurling his arrows with unfathomable strength, injured Shalva, whose armor, bow, and jeweled helmet all scattered into pieces. With a crashing blow from Krishna's club, Shalva's wonderful airplane burst into pieces and fell into the sea. Shalva was very careful, and instead of crashing with the airplane, he managed to jump onto the land. He again rushed toward Lord Krishna. When Shalva ran swiftly to attack Krishna with his club, Lord Krishna cut off his hand, which fell to the ground with the club. Finally, deciding to kill him, the Lord took up his wonderful disc, which was shining like the brilliant sun at the time of the dissolution of the material creation. When Lord Sri Krishna stood up with his disc to kill Shalva, he appeared like the red sun rising over a mountain. Lord Krishna then cut off his head, and the head, with its earrings and helmet, fell on the ground. Shalva was then killed in the same way as Vritrasura was killed by Indra, the king of heaven. When Shalva was killed, all his soldiers and followers began to cry, "Alas, alas!" While Shalva's men were thus crying, the demigods from the heavenly planet showered flowers on Krishna and announced the victory by beating on drums and blowing bugles. At this very moment, other friends of Shishupal, such as Dantravakra, appeared on the scene to fight with Krishna in order to avenge the death of Shishupal. When Dantravakra appeared before Lord Krishna, he was extremely angry. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the third volume, eighth chapter of Krishna, the deliverance of Shalva. May I please have the fifth canto? Hare Krishna. That point goes to what we were talking about in class on Saturday, doesn't it? About how Krishna can lament like an ordinary person. Thank you. Fifth canto, Srimad Bhagavatam. Priyavrata. Priyavrata was the son of Swayambhuva Manu. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. And his guru was Narada Muni. And he had every intention of remaining as a renunciate for his whole life. However, even though he was in the association of Sri Narada Muni, and he was determined to be a renunciate, he was needed for the expansion of the universe at that time. So his father, Swayambhuva Manu, had asked him to give up his renunciate position and become a king, propagate a family, be a ruler. But he refused. So his grandfather had to come. And his grandfather was Lord Brahma. He came down from the highest planet in the universe on his swan carrier to convince Priyavrata that he needed to do this service. So Srila Prabhupada mentions in this section, there are two reasons. Well, first of all, I should say that Shukadeva Goswami mentions to Maharishi Parikshit something very encouraging about devotional service in the beginning of the story, and that is that devotional service can never be checked. It can never be permanently impeded by any material circumstance because it's not a part of this world. In fact, it's something from the spiritual world. It's under the spiritual energy. It's under the entire process of devotional service is under the jurisdiction of the spiritual world. And so it doesn't act by the same laws that I may be used to in the material world. And it goes on unchecked by any material circumstance or one's devotional service, no matter what circumstance one is in, cannot be impeded ultimately. Having said that, there are two things that can temporarily impede one's progress in devotional service that are mentioned at the beginning of this chapter. One of those things is Vaishnava Aparad, means aparadha. Radha means service, worship, and a means the opposite, that thing which checks it. So aparadha means like what we call offenses or things which block our service. So aparadhas to devotees, to Vaishnavas, can check our service. It's compared in the Chaitanya Charitamrita by Lord Chaitanya to be like a mad elephant. When you have a garden and you have small plants growing. If an elephant gets in there, they're going to get ruined. They'll be crushed. And so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that offenses to Vaishnavas are like this mad elephant. They get in and they can ruin your garden and ruin your creeper, your devotional creeper. However, even that's not permanent. It can check your progress for some time or for a long time. Depending on the severity of the offense, one loses one's taste for devotional service to varying degrees by Vaishnava Aparad. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that one should be very careful about that. There's another thing that can check one's, impede one's progress in devotional service, apparently. Do you know what that is? The will of the Lord. So in this context, Srila Prabhupada mentions Jai and Vijay, that it was the will of the Lord that they come to the material world and take birth as demons for some time, for three births. Of course, he gave him a choice. He could come quickly as demons for three births, or he could come as devotees for seven births. So they wanted to come back quickly, so they took three births as demons. But in that context, the Priyavrata also, although he wanted to avoid any kind of household life and just be a renunciate his whole life, not have any connection with the material world at all, it was the will of the Lord that he actually take up some service where he had a connection. So apparently, by the will of the Lord, his plan was thwarted. However, in the beginning of this chapter, there's some very encouraging verses about the power of devotional service. And I'll read them forthright. Shukadev Goswami continued. May I have that Bhakta Ragini? I forgot to plug him in. Missing. Shukadev Goswami continued. My dear King, Prince Priyavrata was a great devotee because he sought the lotus feet of Narada, his spiritual master, and thus achieved the highest perfection in transcendental knowledge. With advanced knowledge, he always engaged in discussing spiritual topics and did not divert his attention to anything else. The prince's father then asked him to take charge of ruling the world. He tried to convince Priyavrata that this was his duty, as indicated in the revealed scriptures. Prince Priyavrata, however, was continuously practicing bhakti yoga by constantly remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead, thus engaging all his senses in the service of the Lord. Therefore, although the order of his father could not be rejected, the prince did not welcome it. Thus, he very conscientiously raised the question of whether he might be diverted from devotional service by accepting the responsibility of ruling the world. Purport. Hare Krishna. Srila Narottam Das Thakur has sung, Chadiya Vaishnav Seva Nishtar Payeche Keba. Without serving the lotus feet of a pure Vaishnav or spiritual master, no one has ever attained perfect liberation from material bondage. Prince Priyavrata regularly served the lotus feet of Narada, and thus the prince perfectly understood transcendental subjects in truth, Satattvata. The word Satattvata means that Priyavrata knew all the facts about the spirit soul, the personality of Godhead, and the relationship between the spirit soul and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he also knew all about this material world and the relationship of the spirit soul and the Supreme Lord within the material world. Thus the prince decided to engage himself only in rendering service to the Lord. When Priyavrata's father, Swayambhuvamanu, requested him to accept the responsibility of ruling over the world, he did not welcome the suggestion. This is the symptom of a great liberated devotee. Even though engaged in worldly affairs, he does not take pleasure in them, but remains always absorbed in the Lord's service. While thus serving the Lord, he deals externally with worldly affairs without being affected. For example, although he has no attraction for his children, he cares for them and educates them to become devotees. Similarly, he speaks to his wife with affectionate words, but he is not attached to her. By rendering devotional service, a devotee acquires all the good qualities of the Supreme Lord. Lord Krishna had 16,000 wives, all of them very beautiful, and although he dealt with each of them as beloved husband, he was not attracted or attached to them. In the same way, although a devotee may enter family life and act very affectionately towards his wife and children, he is never attached to these activities. This verse states that by serving the lotus feet of his spiritual master, Prince Priyavrata very soon attained the perfectional stage of Krishna consciousness. This is the only way to advance in spiritual life, as stated in the Vedas. Yasya devi para bhaktir yata devi tata garau tasyaite katita hyarta prakashanti mahatmana. If one has unflinching faith in the Supreme Lord and the spiritual master, the essence of all Vedic knowledge is revealed to him. Shvetashvatara Upanishad. A devotee always thinks of the Lord continuously. While chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, the words Krishna and Hari immediately remind him of the Lord's activities. Since his entire life is engaged in the service of the Lord, a devotee cannot forget the Lord at any time. Just as an ordinary man always engages his mind in material activities, a devotee always engages his mind in spiritual activities. This is called Brahmasatra, or meditating upon the Lord always. Prince Priyavrata was perfectly initiated into this practice by Sri Narada. Text number 7. Sri Shukadev Goswami said, "The first created being and most powerful demigod in this universe is Lord Brahma, who is always responsible for developing universal affairs. Born directly from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he dedicates his activities to the welfare of the entire universe, for he knows the purpose of the universal creation. This supremely powerful Lord Brahma, accompanied by his associates and the personified Vedas, left his own abode in the highest planetary system and descended to the place of Priyavrata's meditation. As Lord Brahma descended on his carrier, the great swan, all the residents of the planets named Siddhaloka, Gandharvaloka, Sadhyaloka, and Charnaloka, as well as great sages and demigods flying in their different airplanes, assembled within the canopy of the sky to receive Lord Brahma and worship him. As he received respect and adoration from all the residents of the various planets, Lord Brahma appeared just like the full moon surrounded by illuminating stars. Lord Brahma's great swan then arrived at the border of Gundamandana Hill and approached Prince Priyavrata, who was sitting there. Lord Brahma, the father of Narada Muni, is the supreme person within this universe. As soon as Narada saw the great swan, he could understand that Lord Brahma had arrived. Therefore, he immediately stood up, along with Swayambhuva Manu and his son Priyavrata, whom Narada was instructing. Then they folded their hands and began to worship Lord Brahma with great respect. My dear King Parikshit, because Lord Brahma had finally descended from Satyaloka to Bhuloka, Narada Muni, Prince Priyavrata, and Swayambhuva Manu came forward to offer him objects of worship and praise him in highly qualified language according to Vedic etiquette. At that time, Lord Brahma, the original person of this universe, felt compassion for Priyavrata and, looking upon him with a smiling face, spoke as follows. Purport. That Lord Brahma descended from Satyaloka to see Priyavrata indicates that the matter was very serious. Narada Muni had come to advise Priyavrata about the value of spiritual life, knowledge, renunciation, and bhakti, and Lord Brahma knew that Narada's instructions were very impressive. Therefore, unless Lord Brahma personally went to Gundamandana Hill to request Priyavrata, Lord Brahma knew that Prince Priyavrata would not accept his father's orders. Brahma's purpose was to break Priyavrata's determination. Therefore, Brahma first looked upon Priyavrata with compassion. His smile and compassionate features also indicated that although Brahma would request Priyavrata to accept household life, Priyavrata would not be out of touch with devotional service. By the blessings of a Vaishnav, everything is possible. This is described in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu as Kripa Siddhi, or perfection attained simply by the blessings of a superior person. One usually becomes liberated and perfect by executing the regulative principles set down in the Shastras. Nonetheless, many persons have achieved perfection simply by the blessings of a spiritual master or superior. Priyavrata was the grandson of Lord Brahma, and as joking competition sometimes takes place between grandson and grandfather, in this case also, Priyavrata was determined to remain in meditation, whereas Brahma was determined that he rule the universe. Thus, Lord Brahma's affectionate smile and glance meant, "My dear Priyavrata, you have descended not to accept. You have decided not to accept household life, but I have decided to convince you that you must accept it." Actually, Brahma had come to praise Priyavrata for his high standard of renunciation, austerity, penance, and devotion, so that he would not be deviated from devotional service, even though he would accept household life. In this verse, one important word is sukta vakena by Vedic hymns. In the Vedas, there is the following prayer to Lord Brahma: Hiranyagarbha samavartatagre bhutasya jata patir eka asit. Brahma was received with the appropriate Vedic hymns, and because he was welcomed according to Vedic etiquette, he was very pleased. Lord Brahma, the supreme person within this universe, said, "My dear Priyavrata, kindly hear attentively what I shall say to you. Do not be jealous of the Supreme Lord, who is beyond our experimental measurements. All of us, including Lord Shiva, your father, and the great sage Maharshi Narada, must carry out the order of the Supreme. We cannot deviate from his order." One cannot avoid the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not by the strength of severe austerities, an exalted Vedic education, or the power of mystic yoga, physical prowess, or intellectual activities. Nor can one use his power of religion, his material opulence, or any other means, either by himself or with the help of others, to defy the orders of the Supreme Lord. That is not possible for any living being, from Brahma down to the ant. My dear Priyavrata, by the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all living entities accept different types of bodies for birth and death, activity, lamentation, illusion, fear of future dangers, and happiness and distress. My dear boy, all of us are bound by the Vedic injunctions to the divisions of Varna Ashram according to our qualities and work. These divisions are difficult to avoid because they are scientifically arranged. We must therefore carry out our duties of Varnashram Dharma like bulls obliged to move according to the direction of a driver pulling on ropes knotted to their noses. My dear Priyavrata, according to our association with different modes of material nature, the Supreme Personality of Godhead gives us our specific bodies and the happiness and distress we achieve. One must therefore remain situated as he is and be conducted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, exactly as a blind man is led by a person who has eyes with which to see. Even if one is liberated, he cannot accept the body he has received according to his past karma. Even if one is liberated, he nevertheless accepts the body he has received according to his past karma. Without misconceptions, however, he regards his enjoyment and suffering due to that karma the way an awakened person regards a dream he had while sleeping. He thus remains steadfast and never works to achieve another material body under the influence of the three modes of material nature. Isn't that an interesting verse? You think so? Even if he goes from forest to forest, one who is not self-controlled must always fear material bondage because he is living with six co-wives, the mind and knowledge-acquiring senses. Even householder life, however, cannot harm a self-satisfied, learned man who has conquered his senses. Purport. Srila Narottam Das Thakur has sung, "Grihe va vinite take hagoranga bhale dake." Whether one is situated in the forest or at home, if he is engaged in the devotional service of Lord Chaitanya, he is liberated. He is a liberated person. Here this is also repeated. For one who has not controlled his senses, going to the forest to become a so-called yogi is meaningless. Because his uncontrolled mind and senses are going with him, he cannot achieve anything. even by giving up household life and staying in the forest. Formerly, many mercantile men from the upcountry of India used to go to Bengal, and thus there is a familiar saying, if you go to Bengal, your fortune will go with you. Our first concern, therefore, should be to control the senses. And since the senses cannot be controlled unless engaged in the devotional service of the Lord, our most important duty is to engage the senses in devotional service. Hrishikena Hrishikesha Sevanam Bhaktir Uchite. Bhakti means engagement of the purified senses in the service of the Lord. Herein, Lord Brahma indicates that instead of going to the forest with uncontrolled senses, it is better and more secure to engage the senses in the service of the Lord. Even household life can do no harm to a self-controlled person acting in this way. It cannot force him into material bondage. Srila Rupa Goswami has further enunciated this point. Ihayasya harer dasye karmana manasa gira. Nikila api avastastu jivan mukta su uchite. Regardless of one's circumstances, if one fully engages his activities, mind, and words in the devotional service of the Lord, he should be understood to be a liberated person. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a responsible officer and a householder. Yet his service to the cause of expanding the mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is unique. Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur says, Durdan tendriya kala sarpa patali pratkati dhamstrayate. The sense organs are certainly our greatest enemies, and they are therefore compared to venomous serpents. However, if a venomous serpent is bereft of its poisonous fangs, it is no longer fearful. Similarly, if the senses are engaged in the service of the Lord, there is no need to fear their activities. The devotees in the Krishna consciousness movement move within this material world, but because their senses are fully engaged in the service of the Lord, they are always aloof from the material world. They are always living in a transcendental position. What do you think? We have microphones? Okay, well, you were thinking something, you're smiling. And then Rakshit? No? You're happy. Tell us what you're thinking. Something? Okay, Rakshit Prabhu, go ahead, and then Ramaswamy.
What came up for me was, as you were reading the verses, one of the recommendations was that just be led as a blind man is led by a person you can see. Carry out the Vedic injunctions that are there. You have been given this body in conformity with your past desires, etc. And you have been put into a certain varnashram dharma category. Carry that out. And then there was the reference to engage the senses in devotional service. So were the two things connected? Because I was looking for a transition from that recommendation to be led as a blind man by someone who has eyes and then engaging in devotional service. Is the same person who has been given this recommendation, stay in your varnashra dharma and carry out what falls your fate, is to then at the same time engage the senses in devotional service? Was that the connection there? Or?
Yeah. Well, the execution of varnashram should lead one to a gradual purification. That's the idea. There's a hierarchy of advancement. And, you know, varnashram, if you really analyze it, what it means is to live a balanced life. I mean, that's the essence of what varnashrama is. If you try to figure out at this particular time in history, who's a Brahmin, who's a Kshatriya, who's a Vaishya, who's a Shudra, I think you'll be hard put to actually figure that out, because according to Shastra, anyway, because of lack of samskars in the age of Kali, Kalu Shudra Sambhava, everyone is born as a Shudra. Kali Yuga is the great equalizer. So although people may have different qualities in the modes of material nature, some are obviously more in the mode of goodness, some are more mixed goodness, passion, etc., it's hard to actually make some exact definition. However, Varnashram is a way of organizing society according to a system that's set up by the Lord, Chaturvanya Mayashristam Guna Karma Vibhagasha, so that you don't have to waste a lot of time trying to find yourself and trying to find balance. And if you're balanced in your material life, then you're a lot more peaceful and you're able to take up spiritual life a lot more easier. If you're off balance, if you're on one foot, it's hard to jump up high. But if you have good balance, you're on 2 feet, you can jump up. So there's a gradual progression if one has some balance in one's life. And Varnashram system is certainly centered around worshiping God. I mean, that's the idea behind Varnashram, that ultimately the activities are meant to regulate the senses so that you can engage in service to the Lord. And so it's not mutually exclusive, the order to control the senses and take up Varnashram. But until one actually awakens a taste for devotional service and hearing and chanting fully, then one shouldn't arbitrarily give up the what we call Varnashram, or the rules and regulations of a balanced material life. There's a verse to this effect that you'll find in the shloka, your shloka book, in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And it's on page 278. And the verse is, Tavat karma nikurvita na nirvidyeta yavata matkata shravana dava shuddha yavan najayate. May I please have an 11th canto, 20th chapter, 1120. As long as one is not satiated by fruit of activity and has not awakened his taste for devotional service by shravanam kirtanam Vishnu, one has to act according to the regulative principles of the Vedic injunctions. Thank you, Srinivas Prabhu. Hare Krishna. Okay. 11, 20, and the verse is 9, right? Here it is. Purport, unless one has developed firm faith in Lord Krishna by association with pure devotees and has thus engaged full time in the devotional service of the Lord, one should not neglect ordinary Vedic principles and duties. As stated by the Lord himself, Shruti Smriti Mamai Vagye Yaste Ulagya Vartite Agya Cheti Mama Dveshi Madbhaktopi Navaishnava. The Shruti and Smriti literatures are to be understood as my injunctions, and one who violates such codes is to be understood as violating my will and thus opposing me. Although such a person may claim to me my devotee, he is not actually a Vaishnava. The Lord here states that if one has not developed firm faith in the process of chanting and hearing, one must comply with the ordinary injunctions of Vedic literatures. There are many symptoms by which one can recognize an advanced devotee of the Lord. In the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated, Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janiyat Yashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayarahaitukam. One who is actually engaged in advanced devotional service immediately develops both clear knowledge of Krishna consciousness and detachment from non-devotional activities. One who is not situated on this platform must comply with the ordinary injunctions of Vedic literature or risk becoming inimical towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Or on the other hand, one who has developed great faith in the devotional service of Lord Krishna does not hesitate to do anything that will further the mission of the Lord. As stated in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.41, Devarshi Bhutap Nandrinam Pitrinam Nakinkaro Nayam Rani Charajan Sarvatmana Ya Sharanam Sharanyam Gato Mukundam Parihritakartam. Anyone who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, the giver of liberation, giving up all kinds of obligation, and has taken to the path of in all seriousness, owes neither duties nor obligations to the demigods, sages, general living entities, family members, humankind, or forefathers. Srila Jiva Goswami points out in this regard that when a person fully surrenders to Lord Krishna, he takes shelter of the Lord's promise to liquidate all other responsibilities and debts of the surrendered soul. The devotee thus becomes fearless by meditating on the Lord's promise of protection. Those, however, who are materially attached are frightened by the prospect of full surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, thereby revealing their inimical mentality towards the Lord. So, Varnashram, actually, as I said the other day in class, it's kind of like you follow the rules of the country. Like, say you drive on the right side of the road. So that means that you're pleasing President Obama. So indirectly, by following the Varnashram, very indirectly, you're pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because there are his rules. He wants people to follow the rules that he's set down. And there are many, many rules there. But for somebody who's naturally inclined towards worshiping the Lord, those become superfluous because they automatically are engaged in the direct process of hearing and chanting and pleasing the Lord in that way. And in following out of love for the Lord, they naturally follow. Did I answer your question? I'm not convinced. Yes, back to Eric.
I have a question about Arjuna, how he was, I think he was a pure devotee, but he also, I'm pretty sure he was definitely a pure devotee, but he still carried out, like, his warrior duties. How come he wouldn't, like, it seems like there was a conflict there in that he was a pure devotee of the Lord, but at the same time, he was following Varna Ashram. How come he couldn't just, like, renounce everything and go to the forest and, like, you know, I think there's a conflict there, it seems like.
Oh, what a good question. He was following the direct order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who was personally present and who was asking him to fight. And in that case, when you have the direct order of the Lord, or the Lord's representative, then you're engaged properly in devotional service. So it's not that one acts outside the Varnashram system by performing devotional service either. In fact, Krishna himself says in the Bhagavad Gita, when he's talking in the third chapter, that he himself follows the rules and regulations set down in the Vedas to set an example for other people, and that even liberated souls like King Janak, he mentions, had continued to follow the rules of the Vedic process, because ye yata mam prapadyante tam stataiva bhujam yaham mam avart manuvartante manushya parta sarvasha. He said, no, yad yad acharati shrestas, tat tadeva tadojana, that whatever a great person does, common people will follow in his footsteps. And therefore, he said that even when somebody's in a liberated position, it's not that they'll act outside the rules and regulations of Varna Ashram. Narhari Dev? Prabhu?
I just wanted to say, like, the answer... The answer to Prabhu's question is in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 5, text 2. If we can just open there.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
The personality of God had replied, actually, Arjuna's question is, Arjuna said, "O Krishna, first of all you ask me to renounce work, and then again you recommend work with devotion. Now will you kindly tell me definitely which of the two is more beneficial?" And then Krishna answers, the Supreme Personality of God had replied, "The renunciation of work and work and devotion are both good for liberation. But of the two, work and devotional service is better than renunciation of work." So Arjuna actually was, instead of renouncing and going to the forest, he actually was doing the work, but in devotion. So he was actually doing it as service or devotional service.
Thank you. Yes.
You're mentioning about unless a devotee advances, he should not renounce. He should renounce after some advanced stage. Is it correct, Prabhu?
Well, let me say like this. The verse was mentioned in the purport, Vasudevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janiyat Yashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayara Haitukam. And this verse says, by engaging in devotional service, one naturally comes, as a concomitant factor, one gets jnana and vairagya. Naturally, one gets this feeling of detachment from the world and knowledge, which means understanding I'm not my body. It comes when one's engaged in devotional service. Anyway, you have a question forming, so go ahead with it. Assuming that, yeah.
Yeah, I just want to ask, how do you check your advancement? Or when should you decide that, okay, whatever varnashram dharma you're telling about, simple living mainly, if devotee wants to do a simple living and follow that, when should, devotee do that? Should implement it? Or
should implement what?
Varnashram dharma.
Mm-hmm.
As per the discussion, it was like, Varnashram dharma is a natural process and it's a simple living. So if a devotee wants to go for that, he should go to advanced stage. Is it correct? Or
we should act by the authority of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. This is our system that we work under the control of the Lord, under the direction of the Lord. And how does the Lord direct us? Through Shastra. Krishna recommends in the Bhagavad Gita that if you don't know how to, naturally we don't know how to act, so we follow Shastra. And along with Shastra, there's also instruction that comes from Guru. Guru is the active manifestation of Shastra. Like, you can read Shastra and it can tell you what to do, but it won't come after you or chastise you. Whereas if you have a guru, someone who's the representative of Shastra, who's living the Shastra and who's imbibed that person can give you direct guidance according to the Shastra in an active way. So there's the passive agent, which is the Shastra, and then there's the active agent, which is guru. There are different kinds of gurus also. But guru means Krishna. Krishna is the guru. And anyone who's following Krishna, representing Krishna, is also guru. And then there's sadhu. Sadhu means there's the body of devotees who are exemplifying the Shastra also. And their life is sadachar. It means they're following correct behavior. And they can give good instruction also. By following Guru, Shastra, Sadhu, these are the three lines by which we can understand how to, perform correct action. And, Guru means, and Krishna is helping everyone from within the heart. Tesham satata yuktanam pajatam pritipurvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayantite. To one who's sincere and trying to worship Krishna sincerely, he directs from within the heart. But how does he direct? He arranges so that all these different agents come into our life to direct us in a certain way. So it's not such a complicated thing as to figure out, you know, do I have to follow Varnashram? How do I follow Varnashram? But we should follow Shastra. We follow Shastra, you follow Guru, and you follow Sadhu, and then you'll be properly directed. Point is to be connected and follow Krishna's directions in life, and then we'll have success. Ye me matam idam nityam anutishtanti manava. Krishna says in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, in the 31st verse, my instructions are there. Just follow them. It's really simple. He said, I've given instructions, just follow them. And then he says, if you don't follow them, then basically, you'll be lost. Ashradhana purusha dharmasyasya parandapa aprapyamam navartante nrityusam sarvartmani. He said, those who don't have faith in these things, they return to the path of birth and death in the material world. Ishastra viramutsrija vartate kamakarata nasa sinamavapnoti nasu kam na paramgatim. And if you don't follow Shastra, you don't get the supreme destination, you don't get happiness, you don't attain the goal. You don't get perfection. So, main thing is that, as we were reading from the Bhagavatam, we're all subordinate to Krishna, to Krishna's plan. My difficulty is in thinking that I have some other plan that's more important. I think that things aren't going my way because I'm thinking I'm the center. But Krishna's the center. And he's got a huge plan that's going on. Only thing that's going wrong is that I'm not part of that plan. In other words, I think I'm separate from the plan, and I see something separate from Krishna. But as soon as I join up with Krishna's idea and Krishna's plan, then there's no longer any problem. Otherwise, Bhagavatam says, Bhayam dviti abhinibeshita syat. Immediately there's fearfulness because I think that I'm separate from Krishna's plan, and I'm separated. So all these things all these instructions and ways of living are meant for us to come under the control of Krishna. And when we do, then we're completely happy. We're satisfied. And when we're not connected, then we're not going to be satisfied. We'll be full of fear and in a lamentable condition. So take good guidance, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, and then your life will be directed properly. And then, as mentioned in this earlier verse, even if you're subjected to the churning of the material world, which you will be because you're in it, you know, once you're on the ocean and you're going on that boat, it means storms are going to come. But you'll cross over, but it's not going to be without disturbance. Even the great souls like the Pandavas, they were banished to the forest. They were given a house that was meant to be burnt down. They were fed poison cake. They were, you know, had to fight with cannibals in the forest. They had to undergo this big war just to get back to their property that was rightfully theirs, even though they were devotees. We come anywhere close to answering your question? What else? Yes, Narhari Dev Prabhu.
How do we know what's Krishna's plan?
Well, I mean, if there's, like, just take an example of the government. How do you know what the government's plan is? You know, do you have any ideas? They put up a red light and it says stop. There's a stop sign, or it says wrong way, do not enter. I mean, where did that come from? Someone might say, well, who cares for that? I don't care. Red light, green light, I'm not following that. I'll just drive right through. Who put that up there? Everybody knows it's the government, right? And if they don't, they're crazy. I mean, it says keep to the right, so you keep to the right. That's obvious. And then you can follow it up if you like. You can check it out. You know, who thought of this green light, red light thing? Just keep to the right. And you'll find out. I mean, you can go through the red light, and then you can go to court and dispute the whole thing. And, you know, take it to a higher court if you want and go all the way to the top. And you'll find out it's coming down from the government. It's all based on the Constitution or you know, the framework of the government. So Krishna's plans are spelled out in the Shastra. You know, he gives direction. And, you know, you can dispute those things and suffer. Or you can follow them and see the result. I mean, Krishna says, Mrityu sarva harashchaham. That's an infallible law. Like, you can tell how strong the government is in certain places when you go there and see how strictly they can enforce things, right? Like, some places you might go in the world where they say that it's illegal to do bribery. But it doesn't seem like it has any effect because everyone's giving bribes to everybody everywhere, right? So how strong is the government there? But if you go somewhere and the law is completely carried out, you have a good idea that there's a very definite, strong government. Like in Singapore, I don't think you can even spit on the sidewalk or something without getting in trouble. Have you been there? Yeah. They're very heavy. I remember about 20 years ago, 15 years ago, some American kid went out and spray painted somebody's Mercedes, just vandalism, and they caught him. And they brought him in and they whip him with a cane like 8 times, really hard. That was the punishment for what he had done. And the U.S. government was saying, no, please don't do this, you know. And they pled and pled. It was a big international incident that they were going to whip this young boy. And so finally they said, okay, we'll only whip him 7 times then. And but they're very strict. But you know there's, you know, somebody in charge there. So, you know, somebody's carrying out the law when the law is being enforced like that. So the law is enforced. Mrityu sarva harashchaham. Who's enforcing that? Everybody must die. That's a law. Everybody has to die. It's being enforced everywhere. So who's enforcing that law? So I can dispute that and say, you know, well, I don't care for the law. But that's lunacy, actually. The law is there. It's a simple thing. I mean, these laws of the universe are coming from the Lord. It's infallible. And then, you know, Krishna comes himself personally and he says that here's the law and here's the way to get free. Like, you think of these as law books, you know, you have to become a good attorney. Sometimes when prisoners are in jail, you know, they spend all their time going through the law books so they can figure a way to get out. They become their own lawyer, you know. There's got to be a loophole in here somewhere. After 20 years, yeah, here it is. So we can do that too. You know, we're in prison here. So you get these law books and you can go through them. It's like, hey, I found a loophole. Fortunately here, it's like on every page, it tells you how to get out. Because Krishna wants us to get out. That's the thing. He wants us to know who he is. He wants us to be free. And he tells us, what's the problem? The problem is, nah, I'm not going to do it. No thanks. You know, it's this argumentative, this causeless unwillingness, argue about everything. Prabhupada told the story about these two guys, they're walking down by the side of a river, and they see this piece of paper that's sort of torn. And one of the guys looks at it and says, that was torn by somebody ripping it. And the other one said, no, it was done by some scissors. And they get this big argument back and forth. No, it was torn. No, he says, no scissors. No torn, no scissors. So the man who said that it was torn, he grabbed the other one and he threw him in the river. And he jumped in after him and he started drowning him. And as he was pushing the man down under the water and the bubbles were coming up, he stuck his hand up and went like this. It's like the stubbornness of the materialistic person. You know, God's clearly set the law that you must die, and then he gives clear instruction of how to get out, but I'll refuse. It's called misfortune, dur daivam. Even though I get a good instruction, yeah, I just don't want to take it. Sorry. But fortunate person who surrenders to the Lord. That's the whole system. Krishna just says, it's very simple. Sarva dharman pariyaja mame kam sharanam braja. Hantong sarva papi bhyo moksha shami masucha. Just surrender unto me, I'll deliver you from all sinful reaction. Do not fear, do not worry, do not hesitate. I'll save you. And, you know, Bhagavad Gita is the standard book of knowledge. It's accepted by everyone. Arjuna looked at it. Krishna told him the instruction, and he said, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram Paramam Bhavam, Purusham Shashvatam Divyam Adideva Majam Vibhum, Ahustam Rishayasarve, Devarshir Naradastata, Asito Devalovyasa, Swayam Chaiva Bravishime. He said, everyone accepts that you as God. Narada, Sasita, Vyas, Devala, all these, everyone's saying you're God, and now you're saying it. So I accept it, that you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so then you can challenge that if you like. I mean, you can. If you, it's intelligent, you can look at the Shastra and then you can say, how, find out, you know, who's the authority. But at some point, you have to accept some authority. Otherwise, you get into what's called infinite regress. And you never come to any conclusion. It's a way of not surrendering, actually. Say that water boils at 100 degrees. What does it boil at? Something like that? 100 degrees Celsius water boils. And then I say, I don't believe it. Prove it. And so someone brings in a thermometer and puts in the water, gets to 100 degrees Celsius, and water starts to boil. And then I say, I don't believe that's a real thermometer. And then I bring in my thermometer testing kit. We test the thermometer, and then I say, I don't believe that's a real thermometer testing kit either. And then on and on you go. At some point, every person, every living entity has to accept some authority somewhere, so we're under control. So Krishna says he's God, and he gives clear instructions in the Bhagavad Gita and elsewhere. So you can accept or not accept, but you can test it and see for yourself, and see also who else is saying that this is true, that this is here is God. And if you don't accept it, then go ahead and produce your own God. You say he's not God, okay, bring me another one. Who is he then? You have another idea? And how's it back, you know, how do you back it up? But if you look at it and you see who else is accepting and who's saying, then you save a lot of time, because then, you know, with faith you can understand and follow it, and then you make rapid progress on the path of devotional service by accepting the authority. So we have time to chant one round of japa.